AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
The markets are mixed this morning. Well, at least the grains are mixed. But, geez, look what's happening in livestock and energies. Wow. It's like the fundamentals of the economy changed overnight or something like that.
Live from the springboard of a new week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then we're talking land with Hertz Real Estate President Doug Hensley. And we've got Paul Niefer, the farm CPA from Clifton Larson. And right after the news, Kirk Hins from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, happy Monday morning, buddy. How you doing?
Doing fantastically fantastic, brother. How about you?
I'm okay. Yeah, man. All right. I'm good. Earlier today, the Dow was up like 1,600 points, or Dow futures. Uh-huh. Maybe it was Dow futures before we actually got things up and running. Yeah. But we're now about 1,100 points higher, something like that. Make mm-hmm. that closer to 1,000 points higher, 1,040 points higher right now. Mm-hmm. The S&P has moved to the upside. But do you remember the big gains that we saw on the NASDAQ last week?
Yeah. It was huge.
When the Dow was up like 400 points and the NASDAQ, which is at a much lower level overall, was like 350 points higher. So the percentage gain in the NASDAQ was just blowing everything else away.
Yeah.
So all the focus was on big tech. Well, fast forward to an environment where Pfizer is out saying, look, hey, we might have something here even by the end of the month that we can start shipping out there for a vaccine. And yep. The energies are moving to the upside because we're going to get back out and moving around again, I guess. Mm-hmm. Some of the service stocks are pushing to the upside. And those tech stocks that everybody thought were going to remain so strong because of a Biden victory and a stay-home economy are lagging, underperforming what's happening in the Dow and the S&P.
Well, yeah,
absolutely fascinating to watch the dynamics here, man.
And I would say to the energy sector, you're welcome. You might remember on Friday I talked about the panic in OPEC, huh?
Right.
About the lockdowns and nobody's going to travel. No one's ever going to buy gasoline again. That's the end of it. What are we going to do?
Well, and off we go.
Then came Monday morning.
That's right.
Yeah. This is what I do.
Well, we're glad to have you.
I didn't ask for these powers, Chip.
Oh, man. Another beautiful day here in northeast Iowa. It sounds like the rains are going to move in overnight.
Okay.
And we'll see a wet day tomorrow. But I'm more interested in what's going to be happening down in South America. So we'll talk with Kirk here in just a bit about that. All right, man. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, reports from media outlets have Joe Biden reaching the vote threshold to be named the nation's 46th president. Biden would be the oldest man to hold the office, turning 78 on November 20, while running mate Kamala Harris would be the nation's first woman to hold that respective office. President Trump has yet to concede, crying foul amid allegations and suspicions of voter irregularities. The presumed election of former Vice President Joe Biden has already spawned talk in China that the country will seek to renegotiate the Phase One trade deal with the U.S., according to the South China Morning Post. That report labeled the deal as being viewed in China as, quote, twisted, and that they see a Biden administration as being more, quote, rational. Xi Jinping, an advisor to China's State Council, said, quote, the incoming Biden administration will probably take a tougher stance on Hong Kong, Taiwan, Xinjiang, South China Sea, and other human rights issues, and the alleged Chinese intelligence activities in the U.S. Chip, China already looking ahead to the Biden presidency.
Right. And as far as phase one goes, I've said it before, and I'll probably say it again. Let's just leave U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer right where he is. He had bipartisan support.
Yeah.
I would love to see him left in place as kind of a trade czar, I guess, that is there for enforcement and checkups and evaluations and audits and so on these different trade agreements. I think he'd do a fantastic job at that.
Well, Chip, the House is on recess this week. Leadership elections will take place November 18 and 19. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is expected to hold her speakership, even though the Republicans roughly cut the Democratic majority in half, putting the GOP within striking distance of taking back the House in 2022. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said his top priorities through the end of the year are to pass a full-year spending bill, tackle coronavirus stimulus legislation, and confirm more Republican judges, Chip.
Well, and he's going to be looking very closely, I would imagine, at the front runners' early line on what the Biden cabinet might look like as well. And he's going to try to have some influence there, Davis. I'm talking about McConnell. Yep. He'll try to have some influence on, you know, let's move things back to the middle. Let's not get too far left on these cabinet appointments.
And going back to China quickly, China's trade surplus with the U.S. and the rest of the world widened in October as the global recovery buoyed demand for made-in-China products. I'm skipping ahead here just a little bit. September Brazilian shipments dwindled of soybeans and U.S. exports increased. And so we got a little bit more demand there on the export side for U.S. stuff. COVID-19 vaccine being developed by Pfizer and BioNTech prevented more than 90% of infections in a study of tens of thousands of volunteers. And finally, Tropical Storm Eta made landfall in the middle of the Florida Keys overnight, becoming the year's record 12th named storm, Chip.
Yeah.
It's set to drift west, perhaps build in strength, and maybe make a second run at the Sunshine State just north of Tampa. Chip.
Wow, that is crazy. Let's bring in Kirk Hens from BAMWX.com. 12th named storm in the Gulf, Kirk. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Only word is unprecedented. You know, 2005 is the only year that comes close, but we're kind of blowing it out of the water. Unbelievable year.
Right. Yeah. Let's go down to Brazil, because there are some of these areas where the beans have, you know, they've been planted. They are coming up, and they are quickly running out of water in some of these key areas, Kirk.
Yeah, I would say more so the further south the location. I mean, it has been both warm and dry for quite a long time. And I think that's going to be the story for the weeks ahead. I think, you know, central Brazil and those areas will probably be okay. But the further south, you know, the whole, I would say the southern half of the country, I think there's an issue that we could see some continued deficit down there for quite some time. And especially with the late planting, as you know, as it was, that could definitely be an issue for the weeks, maybe months ahead.
Kirk, are you including Parana in that area?
Yeah. I would say Parana, Santa Catarina, Rio Grande do Sul, some areas in southern parts of Mato Grosso do Sul. Those areas especially are hurting for moisture.
Okay, well, you're talking about the number two and number three bean producing state in Brazil, so obviously need to pay attention to it. Full season corn, that's going to suffer the most.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That will suffer the most just because of, you know, the late planted and everything. It's going to be hard to catch up. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, right. Real quick, take us over to Argentina.
Yeah. So some scattered rain south and north of the major growing areas, but the major growing areas, I think, will continue to suffer with a rainfall deficit ahead. Again, weeks to months ahead.
Weeks, man, oh man.
Yeah.
This is going to turn into a market issue. Well, it already has turned into a market issue, but it's going to be something that we're going to have to really pay attention
to. Absolutely.
All right, Kirk. Thanks, buddy. Have a great week.
Thanks, Chip. You guys too as well. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Kirk Hens, BAMWX.com. We got Machinery Pete next on AgriTalk. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. That's a lot of corn. Exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we use all this corn right here in the U.S.? POET is working hard to achieve nationwide E15. Which will generate the demand necessary to use up ever-increasing corn yields, increasing the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10
to 15% would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's the same as doubling exports, and that's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unify around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
You know, Davis, I'm not saying that I'm going to social media for my news.
Okay.
But it is interesting to get on Twitter and see some of those field conditions down in Brazil. And just some of the stress that those plants are showing down there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And social media, Twitter specifically, is kind of an early warning system for some of those changing crop conditions out there. And as a matter of fact, the folks at University of Nebraska-Lincoln that put together the U.S. Drought Monitor have recognized that, and they are going to be monitoring Twitter and incorporating some of that information into the drought monitor going forward.
No kidding.
We're going to have one of the developers of this technique on the show tomorrow to talk about exactly what they're going to be doing.
It's a bold new world, my brother. Bold new world.
it's cool, man. It's cool. So it will be interesting to hear exactly how they're going to be using data from Twitter to improve what they're doing with that drought monitor. Cool
data stuff. From social media. Now that's an interesting thought right there.
Oh yeah.
Can data and social media go in the same go in the same sentence? I don't know. I guess so.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's bring in Greg Peterson from Machinery Pete. From Machinery Pete, what am I saying? He is Machinery Pete. How are you, Greg?
Doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. So we're getting closer, aren't we, to cranking things back up?
Yeah, I think this week the number of auctions will start to ratchet up, and then I think it'll kind of be a buckle your seatbelt end of the season here, November and December, particularly given how strong September and October were. Pricing-wise on good condition used equipment, and with the, you know, somewhat more positive move in commodity prices there, I'm wondering if we won't awaken the sleeping giant of year-end Section 179 buying, which I don't think that force has gone anywhere. It's just gone a little dormant, but once there's any positivity flowing, I don't know, it'll be a really interesting end of the year, I think, coming up.
You know what? We got Paul Niefer, Farm CPA, on at the end of the show today. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about 1031 land exchanges with him and Doug Hensley from Hertz. But I will bring up the Section 179 and what he anticipates happening there. So,
Paul
good point.
Is on it. He's a great source. I love reading his stuff on AgWeb.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Okay, let's get to the pick of the week. What do you got?
I got a yellow combine, 24 years old for you, Chip, a 1996 New Holland TR88. Now, this sold Saturday over in Ironton, Iowa, northwest part of the state. Farm auction by our friends at Zomer Auctioneering over there. This thing, again, 96 model, only had 831 engine hours on it. So really unusual. Sold without any heads and went for $54,500, which... Now, again, I got a lot of auction prices on TR88s going back over the years, and $54,500 is the highest price since September of 13. We had a sale in Clarinda, Iowa back then, a 97 model with, I think it had 1,300 engine hours, brought $55,000. So just over 7 years, highest auction price there on that TR88, but it was looking really sharp.
Yeah. Yeah, looks sharp, 831 hours. You know, it seems pretty reasonable to me, though, Greg. It for what that machine can still do.
Yeah, actually it is, Chip. I agree. I mean, we see this with whatever color combine, when you see one 20, 30 years old that like this, an unusual one with, you know, like new hours, one owner type thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest in them, you know, as a, whatever, your second or third machine, or you had one before that you loved, and now here's a chance to buy a like new one. But
right.
I had to go back. The highest one I've seen in the last 21 years was $67,000. That was in March 19th of 04 in Washington, Indiana, on a farm auction. That was a 98 model with 524 engine hours on it, a one owner. So interesting to me there, that was, what, 20 or 16 and a half years ago. Brought 67 then and almost 55 Saturday in Iowa. So, yeah, pretty cool to run across a combine like that.
All right. All right. So was that a New Holland dominated auction up there, or were there some other colors of iron?
A lot of green, really okay. Nice green. And it was interesting because the hours were like normal hours, or, you know, really sharp machines, but they weren't like, oh my gosh, 3,000 hours or anything. It had a, for example, a 1981 John Deere 4640, 7,735 hours, looked great. That brought 26,750. So, you know, if you're sitting out there listening, that sounds a little high, but you really need to see the picture of it and stand by it. But for perspective, I mean, that's double the current average this year on a 4640. Average auction price is $13,682, and $26,750. That's the third highest this year on a 4640. And again, 7,735 hours. So that's why when tractors like that, they're just well cared for, you know, decent hours on them, when they sell like that, that explains to me why you see, you know, like that 4640 a couple weeks ago brought 61,000 over in Guttenberg, Iowa, with like 2,500 hours. So, like, again, if it's in good shape, even with higher hours, there's a lot of buyer demand right now.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm not going to take any more time because we got to get to this. We got to get to this with what's going on with the trucks and this Jeep in particular. This is pretty cool, dude.
I thought you would like this one, Chip. It was There's a company down in Greensboro, North Carolina, GAA Classic Cars. And I don't know how often they have sales, if it's monthly, bi-monthly, but when they have their sales, I love looking at them. They're always on ProxyBid. You can check them out there, folks. But on the sale Saturday, or actually it was Friday, they had a 1982 Jeep Honcho restored pickup. Now, frankly, I don't remember. I was like high school then.
Yeah.
But they apparently, that Honcho package, there were only like just under 1,300 of them that were ever made. And this thing was like restored, but it's bright red with yellow and orange and black striping on the side, which is so bold. It just cries 70s, early 80s. But that thing brought $32,500. And I just wondered if you're rolling through northeast Iowa, southeast Minnesota with that thing, what people would pull muscles in their neck. What was that?
Darn, but right they would, yes.
Yeah, that sale was interesting. They had a lot of cars on the sale, but I kind of gravitate towards the pickups. Now, they also, a couple others to highlight, Chip, they had 85 Ford F-150 XLT, 5,500 actual miles on it. That brought 49.5, and then they also had a 96 GMC Sierra 1500 Z71 package, 23,000 actual miles on it, black extended cab. That brought $30,750. So kind of cool sale there in North Carolina.
Wow, yeah, that is very cool. And did that 79 Ford Bronco?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a 79 Ford Bronco Ranger XLT restored, and these Broncos, the color schemes on them I always find so interesting. So this one was kind of like, I guess just a brown with like a cream offset striping. And yeah, 43.5 on that baby. So these Ford Broncos, they have really been popular the last number of years here.
Yeah, and in that
Greg, 79... go ahead and those old school Broncos... I absolutely love them. They're completely sick in my book. So go ahead and send one my way if you've got a few extra just laying around.
They look on Instagram. Are you on Instagram? There's so many groups that are devoted to like certain styles of Broncos or Blazers. Mm-hmm. And they're just, yeah, they're fun to look at those pictures for sure. Take you back in time.
Yeah. Cool machines.
If you're going to get a 70s Bronco, I'm telling everybody, please slow down going around corners. And I, yes, right. Speaking from experience.
That's true.
Well, I'm much taller than you are, Chip, so I'm used to just doing that anyway in my everyday life. So anytime I go around a corner, I do tend to check my speed just a little bit, even on foot.
Maybe there's a correlation there, guys, because we talked about the Honda ATV, the 85 model, the three-wheeler a couple weeks back that brought $7,000-$8,000 and the highest record price. But people were like, oh, my gosh, that is such a hazard. And just be careful when you get these retro toys, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I've had experience on both of those machines that we're talking about that we probably don't want to tell my mom about, okay?
Mrs. Flory does not need to hear those stories.
That's right. Greg, we didn't get to everything, but just go to machinerypete.com, check out it all, right?
Yep, you bet. We'll keep updating things, and always good to visit with you guys.
You bet. All right, thanks, buddy. That is Greg Peterson. He is Machinery Pete. When we come back, we're going to talk land values, rental rates with Doug Hensley from Hertz Farm Management. Next on AgriTalk. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Nationwide E15 would generate demand for increasing corn yields. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's the same as doubling exports, and that's 2 billion reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more about supporting Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Brian, we'll get to the grains here in just a moment. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, but we got to start in the cattle complex. What the heck is going on there?
Well, we gapped higher, and we had a solid finish to last week, and I think that we're looking for an upturn in the cash fundamentals, but really it's the outside markets. You look at the stock market indices this morning making new highs here for the United States, and that explosive move up is lending support definitely to cattle. So you have that along with the fundamentals, and we're off and running for the week.
Yeah, and it feels like because of what is going on with the equities and what is going on with the possible vaccine, they've got to be building back in some return to, in-restaurant dining.
Well, it just the cattle market has a tendency to trade with the stock market because it correlates somewhat to beef demand. So there's a definite correlation there.
Gotcha. Okay, some strength in soybeans and corn is trying to follow.
Yeah, the bean market, it's been pulling really hard so far this morning, trying to get both corn and wheat to follow. At times, corn has followed. At times, it's traded to the downside. So kind of been a choppy morning of trade so far. Soybeans, the strength there is coming on dryness in southern Brazil and forecast calling for more of the same over the next 10 days or so. Did have a daily soybean export sale to unknown destinations this morning, so that's given us some support as well. Corn doesn't have those same supportive factors in place, and as a result, the buyer interest is limited.
Gotcha. All right, a little bit of pressure on wheat here this morning, and the lean hog market is mixed with some strength in the nearby contracts. Pressure on the summer contracts. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. Brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. And just so everybody knows, to remind everybody, Davis is also the editor of Landowner Newsletter for Pro Farmer Farm Journal. And so we've we got to dig into what's going on in the land market every now and then, right, bud?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Got to stay on top of it.
All right, let's bring in Doug Hensley. He is the president for real estate at Hertz Farm Management, watches the market as well as anybody I know. Doug, how are you?
Doing great, Chip. Davis, good to be with you today.
Hey, buddy.
Okay, man. So, hey, I look at what's happened with commodity prices. You know, you get a $2 rally in 2 months in beans, buck rally in corn, a buck and a half in wheat, and throw on top of it the CFAP payments, throw on top of it some of the other. And it feels like the cash flow situation has kind of been cured up out there in farm country, Doug. And it's coming at a time when we traditionally start to see some more land moving onto the markets. I mean, it feels like a really good combination.
Yeah, for anybody that's selling land, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, who would have predicted any of this actually on the 1st of August that we would have kind of the alignment of all these different factors happening simultaneously. And, you know, in the state of Iowa, the Realtors Land Institute came out in the month of September with looking back at the last 6 months of, you know, land sales and kind of strengthened the market in the state of Iowa specifically. And they showed it was flat, but that was a backwards looking survey. And I don't think any of the surveys have really taken into account some of the strength that's come into the market. And anecdotally, at least, with the sales that we started to conduct and see in the month of September, we really started to see, you know, I'll call it velocity, you know, strength, call it whatever you want. But we saw a somewhat meaningful shift in confidence. With bidders at public auctions, as well as just in discussions that we're having with people on brokered sales and others where, I think the sense in the market is, hey, this thing may have some legs under it. And for people who are, you know, sitting in the seat of a seller, that's obviously a pretty positive place to be.
Doug, the combination of everything that we've got going right now, do you think it might be viewed as an opportunity for somebody that is thinking, you know, I'm going to sell at some point. Hey, now's as good a time as any. Could it bring some more ground on to the market yet this fall?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the answer is yes. It's yes, but because the reality is that, you know, people have to, if they're going to sell a farm, if it's of any size, they're going to have any size and quality, I should say, it's going to have, you know, you're going to have a pile of sales proceeds to put back to work somewhere. And so what do you do with the proceeds on the backside of it is a question that people are really asking and trying to figure out on, you know, on a reinvestment perspective. And so, yes, is the answer to your question directly. It has gotten people to think about, hey, if I've ever thought of it, maybe now's the time. But as they think through that, it's not just to make a decision on the front end of this thing. It's a decision about what they're going to do on the backside, too, that influences what they ultimately do. I think what we've seen thus far in the marketplace this fall, you know, the majority of sales, like they have been for 2, 3, 4 years now, have been tied to estate settlements. And there are a few, what I'll call elective sales, where people are seeing, hey, this is an opportunity, so I'm going to jump on it and take advantage of the market. But the reality is that would be a small minority of the sales that are occurring. Okay. And the majority of sales are still tied to the settlement of estates.
Okay.
Doug, you and I have talked about sort of the seasonal tendencies a lot this year, just in private conversations and such. You know, obviously slows down when everybody's too busy during planting, slows down during harvest. I'm wondering what do the winter months look like? If I've got a piece of property and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I'd really like to unload this, but I'm not sure. Should I pull the trigger? I might hem and haw for a couple of months. Does it behoove a seller to sort of rush into selling before the end of the year? I mean, once we get to the dead of winter, what can we expect as far as interest goes in plots of land?
Yeah, great question. And so timing does play into people's thinking pretty heavy. And from a just a structural timing perspective, you know, farms sell all year round. But like we've talked about in the past, the majority of farms really come to the market in any given year from about 1st or 15th of September through about mid-March, basically the off-season, like you mentioned there. And it seems like in September we'll get this early wave of auctions prior to harvest actually getting the full head of steam going. And then in the month of October, when everybody's focused on harvest operations, the land market will kind of take a breather, at least from public auction sales, and allow harvest to conclude or get well along. And then in November, we'll come back and start to see a huge number of sales come to market again. I think we're going to see that again. We're setting up with a bunch of sales in November and December. This year, that was actually kind of multiplied in some ways, or at least the discussions were multiplied by the uncertainty in the election. Good, bad, or indifferent, the political parties have different views on tax policy. And some of those tax policies were, talking about capital gains, income taxes, step up in basis, the state exemptions, and all those things come into people's thinking when they're trying to make the best decision for their family. And I, coming into it, all the polls were saying one thing, and that it was going to be a one-sided event. And given that it didn't happen totally that way, or at least it looks like the Republicans are going to hold on to the Senate, even if President-elect Biden is ultimately seated as president. It will be a situation that divided government will hold back some of the momentum, so to speak, in wholesale changes. And I think that actually plays well for people who are wanting to, maybe not be rushed, as you commented, in making a decision before the end of 2020, or being forced to take action conceivably before the end of 2020. Because before, people were saying, hey, if one side runs the table here and tax policy changes significantly, what could happen is in the first 6 months, at least conceivably, of 2021, if it's all one side rule, a tax policy rollback could happen, and that could impact income taxes and capital gains. And it's not far-fetched to think about the idea that tax policy passed in June of 2021 could have been rolled back and made retroactive to January 1st. And so those discussions were happening as to, hey, what's the best thing for us to do? Do we need to get this done before the end of the year? And, we don't have certainty that that's not going to happen right now. But I think if you talk to the majority of people, I think there is some expectation that divided government is going to be the way it's going to happen. And that brings some level of comfort to people who maybe weren't quite ready to make a decision. But from a timing perspective, I think you're going to see a lot of sales between now and December 15th, December 20th. Once you get to about the 20th of December, people are, they're starting to travel for the holidays typically, maybe not this year because of the COVID situation. But and then once we get into the new year, people, again, because of the travel situation, they are usually waiting till the 10th or 15th of January before we start to see too many sales occur on the market publicly. And that will continue mid-January through mid-March and in late March before planting season gets going again. So timing's important.
Gotcha. Yeah, I want to dig into some of these tax issues a little bit more when we get Niefer on here for the next segment, Doug, to talk about that. Rental rates, what's the trend that you're seeing?
Yeah, so I had talked to a couple of people in publicly in July and August, and everybody was in a big hurry to negotiate rents at that time. And my comment to people was, I think because we don't know where harvest is, we don't know what crop prices are going to be, people are going to be better off waiting for full information, and had people negotiated rents in August or September, I think the trend would have been that maybe things were going to look a little weaker rent-wise, yeah, for cash rents at least, than what they would if you're going to negotiate them today. And I think the current condition in the grain markets and with inputs being maybe a little softer than what they've been in the last couple of years, I think we're going to see stable and for late year negotiated rents. I think we could see a little bit of strength in the rent market because, again, these markets all run on confidence, guys, and you know that. And we're looking at 3 to 4 year highs on corn and soybean prices, and we're seeing fertilizer prices that are a little softer than they were a year ago. And right, so that's playing into people's, you know, pencil,
no doubt,
figuring when they're looking at cash flows.
No doubt. Yeah, so that's putting a little bit of upside pressure on those rental rates as we get into the end of the year. Okay, we're going to continue this real estate land conversation, and Paul Niefer, Farm CPA, is going to be joining in next.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Hey girl, what's your name? It's so loud in here, I can't hear a thing.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We've got Davis with us.
Davis.
Doug Hensley, president of real estate at Hertz, is sticking with us. Doug, thanks for doing that. And let's bring Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen into the conversation. You guys know him on Twitter, at FarmCPA. He's blogger on agweb.com. Paul, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm in Phoenix getting ready to fly to Denver later this afternoon. So
That was going to be my first question. Where in the world is Paul Niefer today?
Phoenix, then Colorado, and then Missouri, and then Oregon, and then home. So
okay,
we'll see how it goes.
Very good. Very good. Good for you. Hey, Paul, Doug was making the point earlier in the last segment that the split Congress probably reduces the risk of wholesale changes on the tax policy. Is that how you're anticipating things?
That's how I'm anticipating things. Now, part of me, that's assuming that Georgia Senate gets at least one Republican.
Right.
You know, as long as it's 51-49, yeah, we have a split. Yeah, there's not going to be – I think we're going to have pretty much status quo at least through the 2022 election.
Okay. Now, one of the reasons that we wanted you to talk about this was because of some of the talk that we were going to see the 1031 reverse changed, adjusted somehow, some way, and that it could affect things. But as the conversation was going, Doug brought up the point about the cap gains taxes, too. I mean, if somehow, some way, we do see a push to make some of those adjustments to these big picture taxes and cap gains in particular, Paul, to me, if you're thinking about selling in the next couple of years, you probably ought to just go ahead and do something.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the worst case scenario. Maybe that's what we should look at.
Sure.
If Biden gets in and we get a full Democratic Congress and they get their whole way, you know, you're looking at a capital gains rate that might be 39.6%. Now, it's likely going to be on gains over $1 million, but we know in farmland that doesn't take a lot of ground to hit $1 million of gain. Right. It's going to be taxed at that rate. And then people are saying, well, I don't want to pay that tax, so I'm just going to wait until I pass away so I can transfer to my kids and let my kids pay the tax. Well, Biden's also talking about either having a capital gains tax at death, which again would be 39.6% plus the state tax, or you're not going to have a step up in basis, so your heirs are going to pay the 39.6%. And in the meantime, you know, the value of your land may go down because people know you have to pay more taxes. So if that all came to pass, the market for farmland might get curtailed a little bit.
Doug, did Paul describe that right when he said a worst case scenario?
No, he did. Absolutely. And those are, you know, those are conversations that people are having. We're having those conversations and have been for the past, really, for the past 60, 90, 120 days since we started to see some policy ideas be floated. Because, again, I'm not claiming to one side's better than the other, but there are significant differences between the political parties and what they were proposing or floating out there leading up to the election. So, and those policies have meaningful impact. And
oh, yeah.
So if we have a divided situation, that brings some level of certainty to people, and businesses and individuals work
right.
Well when they have some idea what's coming at them. And,
exactly.
When they don't, it locks you up.
Yeah, Paul.
Well, and the other thing, Chip, is with the fact that the House side, the Democrats lost, you know, 5, 10, 15 of their members, and
yeah.
We know almost every off-year cycle, usually it flip-flops.
Yep.
So even if the Senate goes Democratic in 2022, there's probably a pretty good chance that the House is going to go back to being Republican. So I think
yep.
Even through, you know, 2024, we're looking pretty good as far as no major changes on the tax side. There's no mandate,
Paul,
I think, either way.
Paul, I think what you just described right there and the likelihood that when we get to the 2022 elections that the House, that the Republicans will pick up seats in the House, the Senate will stay Republican or flip back to Republican. Because the margin is as tight as it is in the Senate, I wonder if we're not going to see a Biden administration take a shot at some of these tax changes. With the idea that
yeah,
he could convince enough senators to go along with him.
Could be. I think as long as they're not drastic, I think you might, because we're going to have to, I think, we're going to have to pay for all this stimulus somehow, you know, either raise
yep.
taxes or inflate the market, you know, and of course they're inflating the market right now anyway. But we also know that even if it ends up being 50-50, there's still a good chance what the senator from West Virginia may flip from Democrat to Republican anyway,
right.
or is likely
right.
to vote as a Republican. So even if it's 50-50, I don't think, you know, Vice President is going to be able to, you know, be the deciding vote. So, yeah, I think we're pretty safe between now and 2022 and even maybe through 2024.
Okay. Doug, you in
well,
on that?
The other thing too, yeah, the other thing too, fellas, is remember the Republicans defended a bunch more Republican Senate seats here in this election that happened last week than I think what they're going to be looking at in the next couple of cycles. And so I think there's a potential that it could, you know, even though the Republicans may lose a seat, two, potentially three at most, in this current cycle that just you know occurred, mm-hmm. I think that the Democratic Party is going to be defending more seats moving forward, which you know that positions the Republicans a little better differently than what it would. So again, divided
right.
government is not all bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Paul, did you see? Well, guys, did you see what they offered Manchin in West Virginia if he would make the switch from Democrat to Republican?
No, I didn't see. Was it one of the coveted seats?
Re-election in 4 years.
Oh.
Because they basically are saying, listen, if you don't make the switch,
yeah.
your re-election is unlikely.
Yeah, because West Virginia is about as red as it gets right now.
Exactly. Guys, great conversation. Thank you so much. That's Doug Hensley, President of Real Estate at Hertz Farm Management. Paul Nee for Clifton Larson Allen. He is at Farm CPA. Hey, thank you so much for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Rick Brock and Associates right here on AgriTalk.